Hour number three, Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Earlier, Dan Fouts, and now in studio for this entire final hour, Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State University of Colorado, and a great friend of our program here. And I must say, Dr. Perea, that as you walked in the studio today, I'm sure you could sense that our friend Mr. Hastings has been infused with the Christmas spirit. He's been talking about it all day.
Deep, deep into the Christmas spirit right now. I have bought in.
Yeah, I sensed that walking in. There was a whole, like, kind of a crystallized feeling when I walked in here. And you know what? I'm excited for you, Scotty, because I think that being plugged into that spirit shows how you're in tune with your, you know, your feminine side, your spiritual side.
Yep.
And, you know, your little daughter obviously plays a role in that too.
Absolutely.
So I'm fired up for you. That's good. It's good time of year.
He attributed much of his mood to your teachings.
Oh, well, thank you.
A few moments ago.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so now,
publicly,
on the air.
I appreciate that.
No, you know what? One thing that, and listen, we're going to talk about players of sports, but and you and I have talked about this. In your general specificity, if you will, is sports. But everything you teach for sports is life.
Right.
And I had a coach tell me a long time ago, basketball is the same thing in life. The same thing you need to succeed as a basketball player are the same tools you need in life.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
No, and I mean, it really is. And that's what it is. And what I've braced more lately than in the past, that I think the Nuggets need to do that now because they're going through a tough time. What the Peyton Manning may have to grasp because he's going through a tough time is you control the only thing, your mental being and who you are and what you present. And if you present this bah humbug kind of, you know, we are in Christmas season, Grinch type of mode, you're going to live a Grinch existence.
Right.
But if you could promote, even when you don't feel like it, a Christmas spirit, you know, type of spirit, that I feel you'll live that way. And I don't think I'm far off base with that.
No, you're right on base with it. It's key to understand that we can control our thoughts. I mean, we can wake up every morning and use different techniques to get us in a right frame of mind. So whether we're talking about basketball, football,
SIT,
or a CEO of a corporation, or a mother or a father. I mean, it's all the same thing. You know, you mentioned that we're primarily involved with sports. I'll not correct you, but get you in the right direction. We're primarily work with performers. And it doesn't matter what area you perform in. You could be a surgeon. You could be a first responder. You could be an NFL quarterback. But the bottom line is all those people are human organisms. And at the core level of thoughts, feelings, and perception is mood. And getting yourself in the right mood every day can direct you in how you're going to treat people, how you're going to communicate people, how will you receive their communication? Will you postulate yourself as an open, caring person, or will you kind of walk around life with this half glass full kind of mentality where you don't receive people well, you don't communicate? You know, one of the things we don't do, we find in performance, is we have so many great thoughts throughout the day. I'll look across the way and I'll look at my wife and I'm like, my gosh, she's a beautiful woman. Not just in looks, but just as a person. But do I say it?
Right.
But do I say it? You know what, honey? You are such a beautiful person. 8 out of 10 times, we don't say it. But we'll give them the scathing, you know, hon, gosh, you know.
That dress makes you look fat.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I do that. But we might say something to them, you know, improve your communication skills or you're not reaching out to me. We'll point that out. But we've got to get better at understanding we can create our own mood every morning. There's a technique called SIT, stress inoculation technique, where we train people to use diaphragmic breathing, to use imagery, to use positive self-talk, to frame their mind in a positive perspective every week. Let me tell you something. I've had clients look me dead in the eye and say, Dr. P, don't tell me to say I love my family because I don't love my family. And I says, you know what? Keep telling yourself that you love your family because the brain will begin to believe it. And you know what? If you wake up every morning and you say, I love my life, I love my family, I love what it feels like to be part of this organization, over time, you will train your brain to think very positively. So Just like we can
fake it till you make it almost.
Yeah, it really essentially is. And I can tell you this, having gone through a football career, high school, college, and then I was a free agent in the NFL, I can tell you this. I've been around a lot of negative coaching. And for me to be able to rebound from that and be able to be a very positive person to this day and help people frame themselves in a very positive way, I tell people, if I can do it, you can do it.
And as much joy as there is in this time of the year, there's that counter to that, too. There's people.
That's right. Serious depression. Seriously
depressed, whether it's don't have family around, don't feel they have the economic means, or whatever it might be. And it's sometimes tough for those people to talk themselves into feeling better.
You know what, Scotty? I think most of us feel some of that. To be really honest, I think most of us feel a sense of gloom during this period. But we put on a social mask. We're really good at putting on a social mask and saying, oh, it's a great time of year. It's wonderful to be around friends and family. And it is. Don't get me wrong. But it's natural to feel some gloominess at this time of year because most of us, if we're past 30, 40, and 50, we've lost people that have meant something to us. Maybe at this time of year where it really triggers a memory. So, you know what? I tell people out there, it's okay to feel melancholy at times. Every day doesn't have to be perfect. The SIT is designed to get you back in a good spot. It's not designed to make you fake or pretentious, but it just helps combat some of those gloomy moods. But you know what? There's some days you do feel melancholy, and it's okay to feel that way. We just tell people, be honest with yourself. Don't layer too many social masks because at some point you'll get so far from who you really are authentically
lose yourself.
That you'll live a very unauthentic life.
Yep. Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings, Dr. Rick Perea, inimitable as always in studio until 3 o'clock on your home for the best live and local coverage, the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan, Dr. Rick Perea in studio and undoubtedly approving of our musical selections.
I love it.
Actually, it's Jesse's musical selections over the past couple of hours.
Now, you want me to give you a good Christmas movie that kind of flies under the radar?
I do.
You know, because I'm a product of the Frosty the Snowmans and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeers and It's a Wonderful Life. Love them all.
Yep.
Grinch, all this stuff. There was one that came out in 2011. It kind of flew under the radar. Has some claymation / cartoony type stuff. English, made mostly with English actors and stuff. Called Arthur Christmas. Great movie. Great movie. Great message. So feel free. Write that down. It's free on demand on Comcast. I watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
I put it on for my daughter. So I want my daughter to kind of get into these little cartoonish movies and be important in her life. She actually watched about half of it and then, you know, clambered around, did whatever she did. But I stayed and watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, and what do those movies represent to you? What gets you in that mood? What about those movies elevate your mood?
The probably the positive message that always is behind them. Whether it's the losing of faith and regaining it, the significance and priorities in one's life.
Yeah.
And where you change them. And that's that one deals with that one.
Yeah.
Big.
You know, and I'll tell you, it really comes back to human connection, human affection, human love, knowing that you're included. I've said before on this program, love wins. Love wins in organization, love wins in families, love wins in pretty much any context. And I think that's one of the things that's great about this time of year is that we focus on those connections within our families and with our friends. And so I think those movies or those shows represent – for me, it was always Charlie Brown Christmas.
I watched that one the other day, too. That was
great.
I watched that one, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite elements is when the teacher's voice, the wah, 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 wah. It'll stay in my mind forever. And that elevates my mood to hear that. And when I hear my boys, who are now 12, 9, and 7, watch it, and they're cracking up over that wah, 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 it just takes me back all those years.
Plus, you also realize you've now come to the age with your boys that that's your voice to them. A lot of the times,
yeah,
too.
No, absolutely.
You know, if they're honest about
it. Yep.
Couple of notes on the text line. The total beverage text line at 29588. This from Jeff in Arvada, and it's kind of off the subject, but it's a question that he has. How should a parent react to a golfer who is in line for a college scholarship and wants to give it up? He's a junior.
Oh, boy. Well, the key is to understand why they want to give it up. You know, we talk about motivation in the organizational context and individually in families, too. There's what we call intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. We find that most adolescents that want to get out of a sport are extrinsically motivated, meaning externally motivated. They're motivated by something that's not within themselves. And we find this a lot in adolescent athletes, and we've talked about it on this program a lot. When an athlete is intrinsically motivated, they're doing it because they love it, because it's their experience. And I can't emphasize enough to parents out there to allow their kids to own their own experience. You know, there's no parenting manual when it comes to sport performance. And what we find is parents often unintentionally get over-involved. You know, there's not a parent out there that wakes up and says, how do I handicap my kid? I've never met one. Hopefully I never do. But unintentionally, I think we do.
Sure.
And so oftentimes we get a little more involved. We get them independent golf lessons. We get them a specific coach. And that's fine if it's their motivation, if they're owning that experience. But sometimes, and some of us that have played college or played professional sports are the worst. You know, we think we know what to do, and we get a little bit more over-involved. And what happens is, you know, we have a quote in our office that says, it's hard to be driven when you're being driven. And I'll repeat that one more time. It's hard to be driven when you're being driven. And what that means is sometimes we actually drive this motivation and it's not the athlete. So my conjecture would be, my guess is that golfer is probably extrinsically motivated. Now, the good news is we can get him back to being intrinsically motivated, but you usually need some outside intervention, some outside help, because it's a third party. Kids, athletes, they will push back in different ways. And if we don't let them allow their own experiences, they'll push back. And one way of pushing back is saying, I want to get out of the sport. That's a tragedy to me, because probably this guy could have a great career, go play college golf, maybe even go on from there. But maybe they'll never experience that because they're extrinsically motivated. So my recommendation to the listener is get some outside help, because it's that third voice that can give them some objectivity. Because when mom and dad say it, sometimes as an adolescent, they push it away.
How important, or is it important, as we've gotten, and Sandy's got youngest is in college, and I've got one coming, you've still got young boys too, but we've gotten more specified in sports at an early age. Play just baseball, play just volleyball, play just basketball, play just whatever it might be. These sports have gone now, even in with, you know, I was coaching AAU teams at, you know, 11, 12, and 13-year-olds. And even then, you know, parents come to me, oh, should we just concentrate? And I said, no. If you want to do extra with it, do extra, but don't stop doing the other. But how detrimental has that become to scenarios like that, feeling that they've been driven instead of ever getting a choice? Because we tend to push them one way or the other.
Yeah, it's a major, you know, component in what we see today, Scotty, and in a lot of our clients that we work with, is that athletes become specialized too young. You know, we do research on this, and, you know, at 12 years old, many athletes are forced to choose. And actually, the highest age of participation of youth sport is 12. From 12, it goes downhill. That statistic is troubling to me. It should be higher, 15, 16, 17. And what happens is more and more coaches, particularly club coaches, will get involved and say, you know what, we need them full time. It happened to my daughter. She ended up playing soccer at Arizona State. But she was better as a track sprinter. She had to specify really early. Well, she didn't have to. She chose to. But it was because of pressure. But back in my day, and I suspect both you guys in your day, we could play three sports, and all the coaches left each other alone. Sure, run track. It's a different muscle group. Play football. Play basketball. Different angles. All that. But today, with the advent of club sports, and club sports are great. Don't get me wrong. But with the advent of club sports, I think there's more pressure on youth athletes to have a specificity really early, and then again, we can get over-involved as parents, over-involved with the coaching piece. And before you know it, we have an extrinsically motivated athlete.
More with Dr. Rick Perea just ahead. Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings, Dr. Rick Pariah in studio on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. It's a difficult managerial challenge, coaching challenge too, I suppose, to deal both with those breaking in, and we have an example of that with Emmanuel Mudiay specifically, Dr. Pariah, and those on the way out, a great star like Peyton Manning, 19-39. That's a 20-year gap you have to bridge. And Scott made a good observation earlier. You kind of tried to squeeze both into the middle somehow.
Right.
Accelerate Moody. Let's start with Moody. Accelerate his development somehow. Moody seems like a great kid who understands the realities of being a 19-year-old point guard. But you know, Scotty's talked about it can be a frustrating coaching experience too.
Oh, sure. If you do not understand developmental level, both cognitively, cognitive means thinking, and physiologically, it'll be a tough road. Let me give you an example. You mentioned you called him kid, and you're exactly right. You know, adolescence, we define it between 10 and a half and 24 and a half. So literally the prefrontal cortex of the brain does not stop developing until 24 and a half for a young male. So what that means is the prefrontal cortex controls planning, learning, kind of that metacognition, meaning beyond cognition, thinking about thinking. So what you're doing is you're asking a 19-year-old to be a point guard and run your team when, from a developmental perspective, from his brain, he may not be competent enough to handle all of that. Now, I'm not saying that anyone under 24 and a half cannot be a point guard in the NBA. That's not what I'm saying. Every individual is different in the way they perceive information, the way they communicate, the leadership skills that they deploy. But I would say this, it would be very astute for the Nuggets to understand from a personality perspective, who is Emmanuel Mudiay? How capable is he among being able to take the teaching, we call that pedagogy, the pedagogical delivery system of the Nuggets, and be able to ingest, digest, and then deploy that as a point guard? So I think that's a real challenge to understand is developmental level. And then once you understand that, then your teaching can be tailored to reaching him in the way he needs to be reached. In other words, meet him where he is as opposed to, here's my teaching. I hope it fits. It may be a round peg in a square hole, but hope it fits. So I think the Nuggets could benefit from really delineating or defining to understand his personality and then also understanding developmental cognitively and physiologically.
So where does that put him? That's the first step is to figure that out.
Yes.
And probably not just with him because you've got 19-year-old him, the 20-year-old center, the 21-year-old center, the 22-year-old forward. All four guys that need to be a monster part of your team if you want to have public success as far as the number of wins and stuff.
Yeah. Well, but again – you talk about they're abstract thinkers. I mean, you're concrete thinkers till you're about 11 or 12, then you become an abstract thinker. So you have to understand different developmental levels. And again, personalities. I mean, one of the first things, if it were me, one of the first things we do is do personality assessments on each one of the players to figure out where they're at and how to meet them where they're at. Because that's a vital part. You know, so many people think, well, okay, this player's 6'8", he's 220, he's athletic, he can jump out of the gym, and in basketball, yeah, that's great. But you know what? Effort, energy, and attitude all starts in the mind. You have to have the mindset, the mind preparation in the right place before you can deploy your true physiological competency. I am 100% convinced that Michael Jordan was able to achieve what he achieved because he had paid attention to the mental. Kobe Bryant, mental. I mean, those guys really had mental preparation. Scotty, you and I have had discussions about how you used to do imagery at the free throw line before you really even knew what imagery was and that it was an official really kind of protocol that we use now. So you show me a great, great performer. And I didn't say great athlete, two different things. You show me a great performer in any context, and I'll guarantee you they pay attention to the mental protocols that it takes to get themselves in the right mind frame to affect mood because – you know, mood affects feelings. Feelings affects behavior. Behavior affects performance.
John Feinstein was writing about Michael Jordan the other day in the context of recent developments of the Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods, and Peyton Manning, quite frankly. We've been talking about that a lot here. And he said Jordan was unique in the sense that he went through three retirement phases. The premature retirement, 1993, of course, he comes back a couple of years later. The Elway-like retirement that followed three straight championship seasons in 1998. And then the retirement after he had come back and was clearly at far less than what he had been 5 years. All in five-year intervals, 93, 98, and then 2003 finally with the Washington Wizards. So he got a taste of all three. Most athletes just get the last one.
Right.
Don't they? I mean, you found that out in your experience?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, most athletes will tell you that, you know, you don't usually get to go out on your own terms. And so what athletes are having to learn to do through retirement and through really being phased out is understanding how to do that emotionally and psychologically and with mood. And again, that's getting back to the emotional stability or what we call homeostasis of an athlete. And so what any athlete who's going through that phase has to do is understand that there is a process to this. And so when you have a high performer and then all of a sudden, you know, within a year, maybe even 2 years, they're not able to, you know, compete at that level anymore. You know, physiologically, that's one thing. But what about psychologically, emotionally? How do they adapt to that? What is their plan to adapt to that? How do they have a systematic protocol of how to understand, I'm not as capable as I once was, but here's how I'm going to handle it. Instead of going home and kicking the dog, instead of going home and being mad at everybody and just, you know, pissing on everybody out the door, you've got to have a plan, a systematic plan to how to deal with that emotionally. Because I can tell you, even in my, you know, short NFL career, it was hard. I mean, for 6 months, I was basically riding my bike around town with my headphones on, just tuned out because I didn't know where to go, what to do next. I was a football player, and all of a sudden, I'm like, what do I do? So I can imagine somebody who's played 10, 12, 15, 20 years in the league of how they adapt to that emotional instability that can come with retirement.
And I don't know if you saw the press conference of Kobe Bryant, and Sandy and I remarked on it, maybe the most humble, what was the word that you used to describe the press conference with Kobe? But
well, I thought there was a kind of a grace about it.
Grace, yeah.
Kobe is not always graceful, but yeah, in this instance, I thought he was.
I thought, and I looked at a guy that was kind of what you're going, am I going to be the guy riding the bike lost because what I've known for 20 years is going away? But I thought there was an honesty, a sincerity to him, a humbleness to him that hasn't always prevailed. Kobe Bryant type press conference. I would say he gets his end. Not all athletes are blessed to have an Elway out, but not all athletes are also, like you're talking about, are blessed to actually get their mortality until it's upon them.
Hold that answer, Doctor, and we'll get your response coming back here. Sandy Clef, Scott Hastings, Dr. Rick Perea in studio for the entire hour on your home for the best live and local coverage, the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. $2.49, Sandy Clef, Scott Hastings, Dr. Rick Perea in studio on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Very quickly here, we have some items to give away. Nuggets Rockets tickets. Houston coming to town Monday, December 14th. Pair of tickets to watch the Nuggets and the Rockets on Monday night, this coming Monday night, for caller number 1, 303-228-1043. And for caller number 2, we have a copy of Ted 2 on DVD. So very simple. Nuggets tickets for line 1, our first caller, 303-228-1043. And for our second caller on line 2, the copy of Ted 2 on DVD. Back to Dr. Perea, respond to what Scotty was talking about before the break.
What I said,
refresh my memory. I've been hitting the head a lot in my life. Come on, buddy.
The end. The Kobe Bryant. He sees his end.
Oh sure.
And maybe it humbled him enough that he had that graceful. Yeah. Yeah. Press conference.
Tiger did too. A few days later, Tiger's was graceful too.
Yeah. To whereas some guys get that way, and I know you want to go kicking and screaming. And had an old friend of mine who played in the NBA forever said they're going to have to rip this off my back, this jersey. Now he was an All Star, and he didn't mind being just a bit player at the end of his career. He got that too, but he also got that, you know, it's better to be a bit player and make $800,000 a year than than kicking and screaming, wanting star minutes and $2 or $3 million and be out of the league. He understood the financial part of it, and so he was able to bow out semi gracefully, although his game wasn't as graceful as a one. How does an athlete get there? Should that be something that you see early in your career if your mind's in the right place, or is it some of those things that just some people never get?
Well, the first thing I want to caution all of us is when we watch someone in a press conference, that is a social level of deploying of who they are. That may or may not be true. And what I mean by that is some people are very authentic, and they'll be an oppressor, and they'll be honest. They'll say, I'm struggling with this at this point. But most people are coached to be socially give socially acceptable answers. So when you say Kobe seemed very, I think the word you were used where Sandy was graceful.
He still wants to play 35 minutes a game and take 30 shots. Too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one thing to deploy yourself in what seems like, you know, a really authentic and having grace, but the reality is they still may not. And then on the other hand, the one that, you know, kind of going kicking and screaming, I like that because to me it's being more close to your authentic self. Because oftentimes in our society, we're rewarded for giving socially acceptable answers. You know, people treat us and say, oh, well, that's so nice that you're, you know, you've accepted this. And then again, they go home and kick the dog and get in fights with their family and their wives. So my point is, be authentic. I mean, if you're kicking and screaming, it's okay to be authentic to a certain degree in those press conferences so that people know that you're closer to your authentic self. Because the more masks, the more levels of social masks we put on, that's like a burden, like it's like a refrigerator carrying on your back. And then little by little, you can actually become either acutely or chronically depressed because you're carrying so much on your shoulders that's not really true to yourself.
Help us out here, and we'll obviously conclude kind of on this note. But Scotty was talking earlier about this being a fascinating final month ahead, specifically for the Broncos, but really throughout the National Football League. And you got 5-7 teams in first place.
Yeah.
10-2 teams all beat up like the Patriots and Broncos are right now, wondering, you know, hey, can we even beat bad team? The Patriots lost to a bad team the other day in the Philadelphia Eagles. We got the college Final Four all set and ready to go. Is this more of mind over matter, more psychological, more physical, this challenge that makes this last month and the next month, even looking ahead to the Final Four in college football, so appealing and so compelling?
It is very compelling, but it is mental. It's mind over matter because, again, our physiological deployment really starts in the mind. The body just doesn't deploy itself. It's the mental aspect. So the teams that are really mentally fit, mentally competent to be able to move through this process is what's important. I've said this before, Sandy, and I'll reiterate it again. The best team doesn't always win. It's the team that plays the best on that particular day. And so, again, the Giants 8-8 win the Super Bowl. A few years ago, the Packers were 16-1 or 15-1, and then lose
the loss in the divisional play
in the divisional
to
round.
The Giants.
Yeah. So my point is, it's not who, you know. People say, "Well, who's the best team?" I don't care who the best team is. What I care about is on a particular day that a team is able to deploy who they really truly are. And so the team that's playing the best at the right time is really the team that's going to be crowned champion. And that's what's great about this, because like you said, whether their team's 5-7 or 10-2 right now, everybody's still in the mix, and that's fun to watch. That's fun to be part of.
Yeah, but I call it mediocre, and I don't like mediocre games. I don't think it's fun to me.
No, well, no. Let me put this out to you then, buddy. You know, understand this. People are human. You know, football players are human organisms. And so when we say it's a mediocre game and it's a 10-7 or 13-10 game, that means guys are just in there in the line of scrimmage fighting and clawing and scratching. And I love that about football. You know, I look at the Chicago Bears playing last week. You know, they had a chance to win that game against the 49ers. You know, a field goal kicker comes in and misses a kick. Extra point distance, and he misses it. I mean, look at all the variables that going into winning. He makes that. They're 6-6. They're playing the Redskins this weekend. They're ready to go into a winning mode. They're in the mix. One kick, one hold, one touch makes a difference. So my point is, I don't look at it as mediocrity. I look at it as a bunch of teams that are competing and fighting, and I gotta love that, because at the end of the day, whoever walks away with this championship trophy, it's gonna be they're able to deploy themselves at the right time with their true physiological and mental competencies. Right.
The doctor is a glass half full guy.
Yeah, absolutely. But now, take me back if you can. I know it's hard for you to do in your very unenlightened linebacker era and football player, and you had a kicker miss that sort of a kick.
You'd have killed him. You'd have killed him.
Yeah.
On the spot.
We'd have killed him on the spot.
Yeah, two because, bare hands.
Yeah, you know, it'd been like, that's your job. That's your one job. You know, you got a 33-yard field goal. Hit it, you know. No, but the reality is, I understand there's a lot of mental aspects to that. But, again, that goes to the head coach, getting those guys ready to play, making sure the special teams coach has them ready to play. So when it comes their time, they deploy who they're really meant to be. But I'll tell you what I love about right now is everybody's still in it. There's a lot of opportunity for people, whether they're 5-7 and 10-2, and that's just the delicious part of the NFL of this year.
The always delicious Dr. Rick Perea in studio for the past hour. If we don't do this again between now and the holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year,
thank
and
you.
All of that.
Same to you guys. It's always a joy to be here. And Scotty,
hope to see you. We'll see you soon.
Yes, me and Scotty are going to hook up soon. It's on the record.
There you go.
All right. And on that note, we step aside. We'll reconvene tomorrow. Scotty will be at the Blake Street Tavern on a Bud Light Football Friday. I'll be in Philadelphia for the Army-Navy festivities, and we'll have some outstanding guests. Hopefully, for a second straight year, get a chance to talk with a great Roger Staubach. I think he'll have a lot to say about the relevant sports issues or relevant sports issue of the day here in Denver
well, and
tomorrow.
Well, and we can talk about an older quarterback going out, new, younger quarterback coming in, right?
You sure can.
He had both ends of that.
You sure can.
Yeah,
and
both ends of that.
Where did Danny White go to college? Brock Osweiler, Danny White. A bit of a connection there as we continue. On your home for the best live and local coverage, the Broncos and the NFL. The drive is next. Big Alan D-Mac from Governor's Park, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.